Alan Crane Productions, in association with the Emergent Life Studio, present the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for autumn semester 2025. Today, review for the final exam. I will go through one last look at the markets, and then I will tell you what I think you should know for the final exam. As you write down what I say, you are creating your study guide. And from that, once I am finished with my take on the exam, then it will be your turn to ask me questions about the final exam. Now, I will be in my office during my regular office hours on Monday. And, I'll be in there on Monday at about 8 o'clock in the morning until the exam itself, the final exam, is listed on your syllabus. I'll give it to you one last time just to make sure that you have it. Bear with me. Your final exam is on Monday, December the 8th at 10 a.m., and it goes for 2 hours. So make sure you come here early and often. And like I said, I will be in my office. Well, actually, you'll have office hours, teaching assistants office hours tomorrow, and then I'll be in on Friday during the morning and probably into the afternoon. So you have chances to ask me questions, come in after this review if you have last minute questions. But taking all of that aside, we'll have one last look at the numbers. And then from there, you're about done for the day after you've asked me your questions. But, well, let me unmute this thing so we can talk. And this is, of course, also kind of part of the review, because I will not give you a full screen. I'll give you screens, but I won't be asking a lot of questions about them on the final exam. It won't be a just break down all the numbers. It'll be just a few things. As you can why is it not showing? Hang on here. There we go. Okay, last look. And keep in mind that I could ask about these markets. And on the Asian side, you would be looking at, for example, the Hang Seng and the Nikkei 225. Those would both be measures of stock markets on the other side of the world. And as you can see, the Hong Kong Exchange, Hang Seng, was down, has just been pulling backwards all through the day. Not sure why. Things are looking pretty good over there, but it was a real sour market. Interestingly, down in Tokyo, you had a different story. The Nikkei 225 was up, and it had a very healthy run. It kind of lost its momentum near the end. As you can see, it topped out and slid back a little bit, but it still finished the day well up from yesterday. And then over in Europe, looking at the Euronext, and the CAC and the Euronext both kind of were doing the same thing. It looks like the CAC 40, Paris 40 stocks on the Paris exchange were kind of a little bit lower, but they kind of followed the same pattern as Euronext, which is a larger index. But still, it wasn't a bad day over there. Here on this side of the world, last night the markets were a little sour, but then they've picked up steam, and as you can see, the Dow just is rolling upward 1%. So far today, it's not closed yet. S&P 500, interestingly enough, not up as much. Usually the S&P 500 would be up more than the Dow, but here the S&P 500 hasn't quite made it to 0.5%. And then the NASDAQ, doing the same thing, it should be doing better than the S&P. It's doing less, it's still up, but not very much, up 0.33%. So it's kind of a topsy-turvy day, but there's still a bullish sentiment in the markets, even though the economic data is definitely now pointing to strong indications that we are either in a recession, beginning a recession, or we are at the end of the strong GDPs, the recovery that was going on last year and early this year. Go over here, and you see that gold is still pushing its way up. Like I said, it's not going to get to 5,000 for some time yet, but it's definitely up above 4,000 by a decent amount, indicating the investors who are very uncertain about the future of the world economy. But you still have this amazing crude oil now down below $59 a barrel. So if we're starting to see it at the gas pumps. I'm seeing some $2.84 a gallon, but it still has some room to go down, which is good news. The thing here is the 10-year bond, he is trying to get back down below 4%. It's not having a lot of success. As you can see, this yield is sliding today. It's down from about 4.09% yesterday to about 4.06% today. So that would be good news. If we can have the interest rates getting down a little lower, that should at least slow down, well, at least make it the landing a little softer. If we have lower interest rates, we'll have people borrowing money and companies borrowing money to do things. But we'll see how long that lasts. And the sector map here, this is definitely a bullish day. Look, all the sectors except for, well, utilities, but most of the sectors are, almost all of them are in the green. So this is definitely a good bullish day. It's a broad-based bullish day. In other words, it's not just one sector up pushing. It's all of them are doing really well, except for utilities. I wanted to show you in these last few lectures, I've been showing you, well, I've been doing it all along, but showing you different subsectors of the economy, the stocks that you would look at in those. And I think I would be remiss if I didn't use this opportunity, my last chance to talk to you about this, to show you some green energy companies and see if there's any overall look they have or if they're kind of all over the place. Now, one that I would probably want to start with is NextEra. And you've probably never even heard of these companies. Now, why is that one giving me trouble finding? I've been having trouble with it, finding that one all day. Well, let me do Brookfield. Yeah. Renewables, Brookfield Renewables. Let's have a look at it, see what it's showing us. And interestingly enough, if you look at its beta is right at 1, which is kind of interesting. In other words, this is a kind of what you wouldn't expect it to be, a perfect 1.00. In other words, it flows over time like the market does, the world market. But it does. And it pays a darn nice dividend. Right here, as you can see, that's a healthy dividend, 5.34%. Now, the holding period return for Brookfield, notice it's not an expensive stock. It's about $27.82 a share. So if we were to have a look at the one-year holding period return, which I will ask you to calculate this on the final exam. So watch and make sure that you can do this little thing. I'm going to look down here. Well, it's in a year, it's forecast to be $32.97 per share, divided by buying it today, $27.82. You look at that big number there on top, 27.82. Minus 1 equals. So the capital times 100, 4%. So the capital gain alone, in other words, the stock price appreciation alone, is going to bring you 18.51%. Now, that's nothing to sneeze at. That's a decent return. And the beta is exactly world, 1.00. So now let's add in that nice fat dividend of 5.34% per share. You get that's a hell of a return. A total one-year holding period return of $23.85%. That's nothing to sneeze at. And, you know, sometimes you think about, well, the green energy companies, they're having problems, or, you know, their funding is being taken away, the tax breaks and all that. the strongest of them are going to make it because there is an underlying strong demand that will continue to increase over the decades to come. And Brookfield Renewables is one of those companies that's in the fight. They're healthy. If we look down here real quick, let me look real quick at them. Let me see if they're profitable. No, they're just barely unprofitable at negative 87 cents per share. That's not bad, though. We can't, since it's a negative in earnings, we can't see a P.E. ratio on it. So there is that kind of risk in there of a lack of information that we would like to have. So, you know, it's a risk. You take your chances with it. But at the same time, that's a pretty decent return for a beta one stock. Decent. Now, let me take another one here. I'm going to try First Solar, see if I can locate them. First Solar. Yep. That's a NASDAQ company. See, it's a NASDAQ because it's got four-letter symbol, FSLR. Whoa, that's a high-priced stock, $257.66 per share. Oh, look at that beta. That beta is scary. That is a high beta. Is that 1.59? And it's very profitable, $13 a share. Price earnings ratio is indicating that it's undervalued. It does not pay a dividend, though. So you're riding all on capital gain. Let's see how that plays out. Projected to be in exactly 1 year, 271.81 divided by the current price, 257.50 minus 1 equals, and then times 100. And remember, there's no dividend yield, so this is it. Well, that sucks. That's actually not very good. You see it? Only about a 5.56% return on a high beta stock. You'd be better, if you want to do green energy, you'd be better to go with Brookfield than First Solar. It's just, you can see that there are some investments, just the numbers are telling us, that they dominate other investments. Yeah, First Solar is going to go up in price. It's projected to go up in price, but for that kind of risk, it should be going up a lot more. Let me try one more, Vestas. Whoops, wrong thing. Let me go see if Vestas is listed. Nope, they are not listed. Let me try Adan. Nope, they're not listed. I am a little bit lost here. I thought these were public companies, but I don't specialize in green energy. But next, oh, there it is, NEE. There we go. Next Era Energy. Kind of pricey, $84 a share, but it does pay a dividend, and it is. Let me see. Yep, it is profitable. P.E. ratio indicates that it's slightly undervalued. So let's have a look and see what you get out of that one. A one-year hold on it. You start at 91. You end at $91 on the button, 91.00, divided by the price right now, which is 80. Whoa. Don't want to do that. That was a mistake. Try it again. $91 a share divided by... What the heck is going on here with this? Okay, 91 divided by, right now it's 85.04. Did I do it? Nope. I don't know what's going on with this.
I think it's right. It's scientific
notation. Yeah, I don't want scientific notation. I mean, scientific notation, if I were working with the budget deficit, sure. That's interesting. I wonder. Okay, let's get that out of there. Let's get it off the board and see if I can bring it back up and do that. I'm actually kind of curious about this stock. $91 a share divided by $85 a share. on the button, minus 1 equals times 100. So the capital gain on this one is 7.06%, plus a decent little dividend of yield of 2.68%. Okay, this is going to return 9.7374%, something like that. The beta, as you notice, is actually pretty tame. This one is actually a relatively safe investment as far as stocks go at 0.74, and it is slightly undervalued. It's profitable. So it might be something to keep an eye on. It's a relatively safe stock. That's not a spectacular return, almost 10% though. So this is one that you would want to, if you're into that green energy investments, this one's one that you might look at just keep in the back of your mind. That one we looked at though, that was just absolutely, you know, appalling. Brookfield, that was really a good investment. At least on paper, what we're seeing tells us that that is one that might be worth looking at seriously as putting into your portfolio, just so you have something in that sector in the portfolio that's well diversified. Anyway, that is the end of our time doing Let's Look at the Numbers Together. And now it's time to go on to review for the final exam. Now, by no means is this in any particular order, but the one thing to start with, you get two note cards, 4x6, front and back. Now, there are approximately 65 questions, but there is a matching section, so that, you know, that kind of counts as one question, but it's multiple parts to it. So, you know, take it for what it's worth. You should have about 2 minutes per question on this exam. My best advice to you, and it comes, I think I gave this to you on the midterm, go after my easy questions first. Just clean them up. 10 seconds for each question, for maybe about a third of the questions. Get those out of the way. That builds you up so you have more time for the ones that are a little more robust. Now, as far as the numerical part of the exam goes, exactly what I did on quiz 8, I'm going to repeat it on the final. And that way, you should get a very good score on that. You did well on the quiz 8 in that section, so that gives us the assurance of learning that you got the quantitative part of the course down. Again, the same types of questions that were on the quiz 8. Each one of those will have another example of it on the final exam. As far as other numerical questions go, nothing heavy. One of those holding period return questions will be on the exam that you didn't see on the quiz 8. You've seen them every day in class, so you should be able to do it pretty well. So that takes off the main part. The big heavy questions, the ones that require that you get numerical answers into them, and they're also downloadable from the quiz, from the exam itself, so you can pull them there. Now, going through other parts. First things first, beginning with the semester, I went through the theory of the corporation. You should know what kinds of business organizations there are. There are the sole proprietorships, the partnerships, and the big 800-pound gorilla called the corporation. Corporations are fundamentally different from other business organization types, and there are a couple of reasons for that. Make sure you know what makes corporations different. It has to do with what kinds of, how they can raise money. It has to do with who the separation of ownership from liabilities. In other words, the separation of risk and all that. Make sure you know that, because I'll hit you with a couple of questions. If you know that kind of stuff, they're easy, and you can just slide right through them. Making sure you know in a corporation who has the residual claim and who has the prior claim. That's always on the table as one of the goals of a course like this, that you know that by the end of the course. Okay. Just running through. I did a lot with stocks on the board every time. Make sure you know what the bid is and what the ask is. Which one is larger and all of that. As far as corporations go, make sure you know who is the board of directors, what their job is, the executive management. Know what the function of dividends is. Does a company have to pay a dividend? All that kind of good stuff. And okay, we'll go on to stock now. What is common stock? What does it represent? What kind of different stock are there? In other words, there's common stock, but there's also tracking stock, classified stock, restricted stock. Make sure you know those kinds of terms, that kind of terminology. Preferred stock, what makes it preferred over common stock? Now bonds, I'll return to bonds, but what is a bond? What does it represent to a corporation? I won't get into real deep detail on the convertible, callable, and all that kind of stuff. It just gets to be kind of tedious, and there's too many other questions I have to ask. But understanding what a bond is, and of course, obviously, you'll have a question where you'll calculate a bond yield, and you'll calculate a bond price. Now, I will not have you calculate a dirty price of a bond. However, I will ask you something about what the difference is between the dirty and the clean price. Let me look at something here real quick. No, I don't want that, for heaven's sakes. Okay, as far as just investment knowledge in general, let me focus for a minute on risk and return. What is the relationship between risk and return. Make sure you know the last way I explained it. The greater the non-diversifiable risk, the greater the expected return. Make sure you know it. As far as risk goes, we divide risk up into different types. There's total risk, which is measured by standard deviation, the Greek lowercase sigma. But then that total risk is divided into two parts, the systematic, which is sometimes called non-diversifiable risk, and the non-systematic, which is sometimes called the diversifiable risk. Make sure you understand that interrelationship. What is the measure we use of non-diversifiable systematic risk? What is the symbol? What are we looking for? Now, obviously, you'll have a numerical question on the capital asset pricing model. I might also ask you something more qualitative. What do I mean by the market premium over risk-free? What is the formula for that? Now, you'll be able to bring your ratios sheet with you. Although you won't have to calculate any ratios, I will have several questions where I want you to show me that you understand ratios. So, for example, I'll give you some ratios. Which one is the biggest? Which one's the smallest? Which one is in the middle? I'll do a couple like that. Now, on interest rates, make sure you know what I mean by the risk-free rate. What are its parts? What do I mean by the risk premium? What are its parts? I might give you some kind of a debt, type of debt. Okay, what parts are dominant in that interest rate on a home loan or a AAA corporate bond or something like that? Now, let me talk about cost of capital for a minute. I won't have you calculate, like, what is the cost of retained earnings? What is the cost, after-tax cost of debt? What I would, however, have you do is show me that you understand the relationship. Which component cost of capital is usually the cheapest? Which is the most expensive? I showed you a chart of weighted average costs of capital. I wouldn't ask you for a detail, a specific, but I might ask you for something that is a broader look, something you see in the data that seems to be recurring. Just jumping around a little bit, I brought up financial intermediation. What is it? What is required for a financial intermediation to be successful? What are the factors that have to have a check mark beside them? There are three. Just throwing around a few other terms. What do I mean by liquidity? I'm pretty sure that there will be still a few who use an internet definition, which will get you the wrong answer. You go back to your notes and to the podcast, and you'll get the right answer. I've asked it a couple of times on quizzes now. Get it right on the final exam. Now, jumping back, one last thing. I would be remiss if I didn't bring it up, is the terminology we use for debt. What do I mean by the issuer of the debt? Well, that would be the borrower. If I said the seller of the debt, that would be the borrower. The buyer or the investor is the lender. And the length of the debt is also something. What's the difference between a bill and a note and a bond? Make sure you know that. Oh, I almost left it out. I won't have you calculate a free cash flow, but I will expect you to understand what the moving parts of it are. Like, for example, net operating working capital. If you have, say you have your accounts receivable goes up. Is that an addition to cash flow, or is that a drain on cash flow if your accounts receivable go up? What about if your inventory goes up? Well, what about if your accounts payable go up? What do these do to your free cash flow position? The first two would drain it because that's current assets going up, which causes free cash flow to go down. But the last one, that's a current liability. And when current liabilities go up, they add to free cash flow because you're not spending money that you were supposed to. Swinging around here, I just ran into a kind of a little knot of questions here. Back on bonds, what happens to the price of a bond as it gets closer to maturity? What happens to the price of a bond if the spread between yield and coupon increases? Again, what happens to the price of a bond if the spread between coupon and yield increases? Just tying up some more loose ends, I did give you a lecture on ethics. I could ask you a couple of questions from there. I'll let that go. One thing, though, I would mention is go through your quizzes. Traditionally, I copy and paste a couple of questions right from quizzes into the final exam. I do the same for the midterm. You'll see questions that are very familiar looking, a few. Oh, he asked this on the midterm. So that means that it's worth your while to go back through and make sure that you can ace all of the quizzes and the midterm. Because this is where you have one last chance to shine on those. Now there are just kind of questions here and there. Terminology. Get your list of terms that I've used organized. And make sure that if I said it in class, if I emphasize it, it could be intrinsic value, liquidity. It could be something, a lot of little terms here and there that I have brought up over the weeks and months that we've been together. Make sure that you can catch those, because those can pop up. What's the difference between money and capital, for example? I defined each of those. You should know that difference, especially in questions like matching questions. What do I mean by a debenture? Those kinds of questions. I've thrown them out through the semester. Just make sure that you've got a good grasp on what's going on. I might ask you a general question from, let's look at the numbers. Okay, price of crude oil, price of gold. Something about stocks or the Dow. What does the Dow 30 represent? What's the difference between the NYSE and the S&P 500? They're fundamentally different animals. What is it that's different about them? Is the Standard & Poor's 500 an exchange? Well, if it has a number after it, it is not. I think I did that a couple of times on quizzes, just to make sure that you know the difference between a full-blown stock exchange and just a number, an index kind of thing. Free cash flow. I will not have you calculate one, but I do want you to know the formula. There are a couple of places where I might say, which of these is the formula for? And I'll give you a choice of formulas. Make sure that you know how to identify the correct one. It could be, the differences could be in the choices, could be a plus or a minus or something like that. Want to see if you can identify the formula that is supposed to be used to calculate something. Like free cash flow, like market premium, like CAPM, or like the price of a stock, those kinds of things. Back clear to the beginning, I forgot to mention this. Do make sure you know the difference between finance and accounting. What we care about as far as costs go versus what accountants care about costs. I did that on a quiz. Make sure that you've got that. Anything you saw on a quiz is fair game for the final exam. I should tell you that right off the bat. So make sure that you see that question and know how to answer it correctly. Like I said, though, make sure you know that terminology, because as far as questions go, there may be some in the big body of the qualitative questions, but also the matching. is just showing me that you can identify terms and what they mean. And that's the main part of the matching. Let me run back up here real quick. I want to check something before I finish up here. Run back through to see if I can catch anything else that I think you should know. Capital budgeting decision making. What do I mean by the internal rate of return? How do I use a hurdle rate? Net present value, the terminology. Let me check something here real quick. Yeah, I went through that. Oh, there was one more thing, and I'm trying to remember what it was. Oh, I remember what it was. Okay, give me a second here. I went through a kind of a complicated explanation of the short and long-term effects of money supply policy. What happens in the short run if the Federal Reserve increases the money supply? What happens in the long run? Or conversely, what happens in the short run if the Fed decreases the money supply? And what happens in the long run? This is especially important, and it's been important for the last, in the current economic cycle, for the last 6 years or so, that understanding of short run versus long run consequences of Federal Reserve policy. Right now, the Federal Reserve has a lot of pressure to increase the money supply because of the short-run effect. However, there's a long-run effect that is why the Fed really doesn't want to, unless it just absolutely has to. That's enough on my end. Now you ask me questions. What do you got for me? Well, if you don't have any questions, go ahead.
Is it 30%?
Yeah, 30%. It's a whopper, but one thing that I will tell you is that as you were getting beaten up by me on the quizzes in the midterm, by the time you get to the final exam, you are strong. I usually get a very good average on it, and that's the reason. It's like more blood in training, less sweat in combat. So you will feel a lot more comfortable on this final exam because you've seen so much of it before in earlier assessments. So yeah, that's why I make it a strong part of the score of your overall course grade, because you do fairly well on that. What else? Anything? Okay, that's all I have for you. I thank you.